I've got the ladies from Hoedspruit Dialysis in studio. We've got the aircon on, we've got water, and we're going to jump straight into chatting to these lovely ladies. Welcome in studio. I've got Nikki Wilson and Mariska Plain.
Player,
P-L-A-Y-E-R.
Like are Gary
you,
Player.
Are you from that? Are you related?
So my husband is related.
Oh, wonderful.
Far along, so I get the golf reference quite often, and I've gotten off a few parking tickets
there
by throwing the surname.
That's always a good thing to take advantage of. But welcome in studio, and it's so nice to have you guys here. And you know, lots of people we've been playing your advert now on the radio, and I've had two people come to me and say, I didn't know we had a dialysis office here in Hoedspruit, and it's just about getting out there and letting people know who you are, and that's all about advertising. And also, you know, sometimes we get lazy in Hoedspruit. I mean, people don't do anything; you just go on Facebook. And you just say, where can I have that done? So we're so used to it, and because you're such a small community. But it's wonderful to have you guys here, and it's wonderful to have your one branch here. But Nikki, as everyone always wants to know, we've got to have a little bit of background, and we need you to tell us a little bit about yourself.
Awesome. Thanks so much. I mean, it's just such an honor to be here. I don't know why we haven't done it before, actually, because we've been here since 2021. A bit about me. So I didn't plan to get into dialysis at all. I think what a lot of people comment on is how things happen by accident, just by being open to new opportunities. So my background is in hospitality, but at least I married my husband out of that, so it wasn't a complete fail. And then, you know, I went into study nutritional therapy because I was really passionate about health, and we'd had struggles with our firstborn son, and I was like, okay, I need to learn. That's my answer for everything. There is an answer. You just have to learn what that answer is. So that's kind of what I started doing. And then nutritional therapy didn't work out, only because of regulations in the country. And my dad was part of a company that did financing for small businesses, medical focused businesses that brought treatment to underserviced areas. So on a nutritional conference, he'd been involved in a dialysis clinic in Atlantis, and he said, I'm never going to get there. Just go and have a look for me. Take some photos. They've just got their license. They're so excited. And so off we went to have a look at this dialysis clinic. And even though I understood the concept of dialysis and kidney failure, I'd never actually been in a dialysis unit, and I completely geeked out because it's got all this sort of technological stuff, and you have to purify water, and then they've got these chairs, and it's so the combination of like health focus but also hospitality. When I found out that people spend, you know, 12 plus hours a week having dialysis, like, you've got to be comfortable. It's got to be a friendly environment. So I think those two things kind of smushed together. Yes. And I was like, there might be something here. So coming back to White River, and now it's amazing how something that wouldn't have featured in my awareness before, I started picking up the word. So I was like standing in Oasis, as we do, waiting for water to be filled, and I could hear somebody say, you know, I'm not going to, on the phone, and I'm not going to be in time to fetch mum from dialysis. And I was like, oh, I wouldn't have heard that before. And it happened a few more times, and I was like, the universe is telling me something here. And I happened to bump into somebody, and I heard that they'd just come back from dialysis. And I was like, okay, now I've got to say something. And I chatted to him, and he's actually still one of our patients. And I said, like, where do you go for dialysis? He's like, no, he goes down to Nelspruit. Now, the road between White River and Nelspruit used to be like a little dorp, little track, you know. Now it's the R40, and yes, it's busy, and it's... And he shared how tough it was being self-employed, traveling that road, and how that took away from his working hours. And I guess what happened is my mouth was faster than my brain, and I just said, why don't I open a unit in White River? And he was like, yes. And he did, to be fair, he harassed me quite a bit off the bat.
Yeah.
Like, are you going to do it? Are you going to do it?
No pressure, but.
Exactly. And so what I did was went to the same company, my dad's company, and I said, like, here's an opportunity. You know, I've done all the research. I think there's a good opportunity to have a dialysis clinic here. And, yeah, again, it just like belief that I was doing the right thing. And jumped in. So if to put it in a, like a timeline, I went to that conference in the November of 2016. In the May of 2017, I handed in a feasibility study on a White River dialysis unit. And in the August of 2017, we opened.
Oh, fantastic.
And I was just like, you know, this, everything kind of lined up. And you just, you learn through doing. And that was really important. And then, of course, surrounding yourself around with the people that have the expertise in various areas. So I could really look at how to make it comfortable and all the processes, which I really enjoy. Like, I do like a spreadsheet. I won't lie.
Nothing wrong with that.
And so it was really a case of growing and figuring it out together. And yeah, White River, it's 7 years old now.
Wow.
And that patient is still one of our patients.
Oh, fantastic.
So he was, you know, patient number one. And it's always an honor when you think about when we celebrate a birthday as a unit, then there's all these patients that have also been with us for that long.
And they're just as dedicated at the end of the day.
Yeah, and you get to know them.
Of course.
We sometimes joke that we see more of our patients than we do of our
family.
Because you're there in, you know, a minimum of 12 hours a week. You get to know whose kids are writing matric or, you know, where they're like going on holiday and things like that. So it really is a fulfilling industry to work in.
And Mariska, you've part of the family here. And where did you, how did you blend into all of this?
So my entry into dialysis wasn't as serendipitous as Nikki's. It was quite intentional. Growing up in the Free State on the farm, I always knew that I wanted to go into healthcare, medical and wellness, but I was equally as interested in technology and all of the engineering and that type of thing. So one degree that stood out was clinical technology, and when I set my focus on that, I was like a train. I knew where I was going. And so I studied at CUT in Bloemfontein, and I did my community service or work integrated learning years in Klerksdorp. Got a lot of experience, and out of that I knew exactly the type of unit that I wanted to be part of, the company that I wanted to be part of, and the type of service I wanted to provide to our patients. And so in 2020, just before COVID, I rang up Nikki and I said, I don't know what your plans are, but you better have a job for me because I want to go to the Lowveld. We want to be in this area. And so in the heart of lockdown, I packed my little bags in my Ford Figo and we came through. And I started with Nikki in the April.
Because you still had to carry on through COVID. It's not like you could shut down.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. And we were so lucky. We really had no patients lost during COVID,
fantastic.
Which is like a badge of honor that we wear very proudly. So Nikki and our relationship just grew from that, and we knew that we had the same vision for the patient outcomes and what we wanted to drive. And from there, we grew the business from one small unit in White River to the five we have currently.
And so you're running five dialysis businesses. And whereabouts are they? So your first baby is White River.
Yeah. And it'll always be.
I can imagine.
It's really your first baby. So White River was first. Then Valcom, although we weren't originally involved with the setup, we took over sort of management of that one quite early on. And then after that was Hoedspruit. So we came here, and it was also, we're like on the tail end of lockdown because it was
2021.
All the photos that I have on the fit out, I'm still wearing a mask and, you know, and I still have my kids with me. So schools must have still been closed.
Yeah, because we don't intentionally take them with on road trips.
No.
working road trips.
And then after that, we did Barberton and then Nelspruit. So
fantastic.
It's really sort of the R40 route, and then Balcombe's a bit of an outlier.
I always joke and say I just have to keep my heart in the Free State, so we have Balcombe there, so that I can stay true to the roots.
Yeah.
And obviously, I was just saying, I asked earlier on, if a patient is, because you've got the five branches, if a patient is going to one of those destinations, they can still make use of your facilities at that location.
Yeah, absolutely. And we often have that, where we have visitors that are coming to the Kruger.
Yes.
They might spend a few days in Hoedspruit, and then they go into Nelspruit, maybe waiting for their flight out or things like that. So we often see, you know, that patients like both locations. And if we don't have a unit in the area that they want, we also do, you know, we build a relationship with the other professionals and the other units as well, because I think it is, you know, it's teamwork. At the
of
end
course.
Of the day, we can't have a unit in every town everywhere.
Yeah.
It would be nice.
Yeah.
But, you know, a little hard. So we also have a good relationship with a lot of the other independent units and corporate units.
And just to backtrack a little bit, you know, not everybody is aware of what dialysis is and what it does for somebody. And obviously, and what the exact treatment is for dialysis. Can you just give us a bit of a breakdown as to when would a person need to use dialysis and what it's actually for?
I'll do the like when, and then Marissa can do the what.
Logical
stuff. And I think this is really something that we've seen, is that there's a few sort of primary drivers of kidney failure within most countries, and it's not unique to South Africa. What we're seeing in South Africa is quite representative of what's happening globally. And so you often see like a diabetic, not well-managed diabetes, as well as not well-managed hypertension, being the leading causes for kidney failure down the line. There are some outliers. Obviously, there are genetic conditions, and there are some other autoimmune, but that is a minority of the kidney failure that we're seeing. So most of it is like lifestyle factors, but often not given sort of the care and consideration and effort and energy from a primary care perspective, and then ending up on dialysis. And there's stages. So, I mean, our kidneys are amazing.
Absolutely
organs.
Amazing. When I read up on it as well, I just like, give this guy bells.
Exactly. And you know, you look at the machinery that we have to have in the unit
to replace
to
it.
Like if you took your two fists and you put them, like that's how big your kidneys are. And to think that we have to have huge machines, lots of pipes, lots of water, a big reverse osmosis plant in order to do the job, you know, better than it used to be, but not as efficiently as what our kidneys can do. But there are stages of kidney disease. So most people who have kidney disease may never end up on dialysis, but if they get to stage 5, is where they have 5% or less kidney function, then dialysis is really the only way for them to continue living a kind of a quality type of life. So there's a lot of prevention that can happen
before you get to that
absolutely. I mean, there are situations, for example, in like trauma or something like that, where it's unforeseen and now something's happened. But that isn't the majority of cases that land up.
And can one function with one kidney?
Yes.
And do you have to have dialysis if you've got one kidney?
No. So
okay.
I guess. If you look at the organs, like we only have one brain, but we've been built for redundancy when it comes to our kidneys, that you can actually function really well with
one kidney.
And as long as that function is really
well
good,
looked after,
then you can function quite well with only one kidney. Mariska can do all the technical stuff.
Yes.
What it actually does.
Because I think I've been into your facility, and it is overwhelming. for a first-time person. And it's overwhelming. You see all the pipes and you hear the machine going. And I'm thinking it looks painful, but the patient's lying so relaxed and calm on the chair and on the bed. And but I'm sure that, you know, obviously once you've been for a few, it's okay. But just give us a breakdown of how that all actually hooks up into one's body.
Awesome. Stop me if I geek out completely. So dialysis is really based on diffusion and osmosis. And I know those are big words, so I'll simplify it as best I can. We have a fluid that we mix with ultra pure water. So Nikki's mentioned the reverse osmosis machine. We really take out all of the chlorine. We soften up the water so that it's really just our H2 and our O. And we mix that with a solution that has all the electrolytes that we need in the correct concentration. We pass that through a tubing, and on the other side of the machine, we obviously connect to the vascular side of the patient, so we get blood, and these two pass a semi-permeable membrane. And there's almost like an exchange. We give you all the good stuff, and you give us all the bad stuff, and we will discard it for you. And Nikki mentioned it's a four-hour treatment.
Per one treatment.
Wow. Twice a week if your kidney function is still in the higher level of stage 5. But as it deteriorates, we end up going for 3 times a week for 4 hours. So that's a massive change in, you know, lifestyle and adapting. And that's why comfort is important to us. You don't want to go into a dull place and spend 4 hours there. Yeah. That's the simplified version of how we do dialysis. It is an amazing invention. And I think we are lucky that we are here today. And there is still so much innovation. We were recently at the Renal Congress, and we are really excited about the future for dialysis and the technological advances that's happening in our field.
And obviously, there is no age restriction.
No.
So
there's no discrimination.
Yeah.
You know, obviously you will see similarities because of the population of the country. Yeah. So you will see those same demographics filter through into your unit. But if you have unmanaged of these chronic conditions, whether you 7, 27, 77, it's gonna have an impact. And I think that is something that we saw sort of post-COVID, and we're sort of seeing it now. I think a lot of people put their health checks on hold. We were scared. Not many people went for their checkups. And so we are seeing a slightly younger population coming in and needing dialysis now. And whether those two things are connected, we can only speculate. But I think it does just illustrate or highlight how important it is that if you're not feeling well, or if you have, like, you know, little niggles, then instead of just adapting and going, oh, it'll be okay, like, really be proactive about
and go and get yourself checked. And it's a simple test. You can go to your local GP, and I think you can either do a blood test or they can also do a urine sample.
Yes. So it's often like the best results or the most accurate results is taking sort of creatinine and some other figures and putting them together to get a real picture of what the risk profile is.
Because you've obviously got various stages of your risk profile, so you want to try and catch it as soon as possible. Because you don't have to go on dialysis if you are completely towards the end of your stage. You can you go to be a little bit preventative if you are already on a borderline?
Yes, I mean, and it has varying. There's a lot that factors into that, you know, and it really is about looking at the person as a whole. Yeah. Looking at medication, sometimes the medication themselves negatively impact the kidneys, but you can't not take the medication. Yeah. So it's like balancing risk and reward in those situations. So there is a lot that can be done. Obviously, we'd love to not have people in our dialysis units. I always say it's really hard if you need dialysis, I really hope you come to our units, yes, because we love, yes, what we do. We're so passionate about improving outcomes, but I really hope that nobody needs, yeah, dialysis. So it is something that fundamentally changes your life, mm, and impacts not just the person, but their family as well.
I can imagine 4 hours, three times a week, mm, and it's then getting there. Yeah. Then doing it, and then after that, you're obviously not ready to run a marathon after a procedure like that. So that downtime, you know, it's. I'm sure that it consumes a whole part of your life if you have to put it all together. And are majority of these procedures covered by our medical aids?
Yes. So okay. If somebody has like PMV for chronic kidney disease, then the treatments are covered through medical aid. Obviously, if you don't have medical aid, then that's a whole different discussion, because then you have to go via the state, and the criteria are really strict. They keep changing, so I'm not going to even hazard what they are at the moment. But that is a tricky situation, and again, just under service. Yeah. So not all the government hospitals or state facilities will have dialysis units.
Of course, and especially for the majority, for the numbers, you know, if you've got in an area like you say, you're underserviced, but you've got such a high number of people that need it. I mean, how many times can you keep that machine going every day, 4 hours? That's the thing, is to keep up with the numbers at the end of the day. But I mean, I just think it's something that we all take for granted in our daily living, hey? And it's all boils down to preventative care. A couple of tips maybe on what to do and how to be gentle with your kidneys.
Mm-hmm. I think the first tip is to empower yourself with knowledge. You know, most of us go to the GP at least once a year. Just ask for the test. You know, it's not super expensive. No, it's definitely under 300 rand, and it can tell you so much already. And if I think of like people that in my family, obviously, you know, they know the test, and then I get the blood results and we have a look at them. When you get that information, it can really be the motivation to make some changes, right? Because now you know. And in the early stages, when you've still got really good kidney function, things like focusing on hydration is so vital.
Yeah.
And we see also a lot of instances where people are working in an environment where they are dehydrated in heat. So think of like a mining community where the impact on their kidneys is quite high. So just focusing on hydration, and I know we say like set your alarm. We've all got phones. Yeah. Set your alarm every hour.
Have something. Drink something. And it's not overrated. Water is not overrated. Drink water.
Yeah.
And I see a lot of kids that just don't drink water. They're drinking all sorts of things but water.
Yeah.
And does it count at all though to keep yourself hydrated? Water versus obviously soft drinks and juices.
Yeah, it's definitely. And I mean, I think there's so many other downsides of like the high sugar and high caffeine. I mean, the amount of energy drinks on the market. And it's such, I mean, talk about amazing marketing, right? They have got the marketing done pat. So I think it is really about just recognizing that. And maybe initially it's a strategy, right? So I can have what I want, my Coke, my Sprite.
But you've got to have your quota of water.
And I think the difficulty is the worse your kidney function gets, then you have to start limiting your fluid.
That's where our
patients initially really struggle. Because, you know, in the beginning they're like, I have to drink more water. And then you get past that tipping point where now you have to restrict your fluids, because otherwise you're really creating, overloaded,
making more waste in your body.
You're overloaded and your kidneys can't remove the fluid for you. So the only way we can do that is on the machine, and that's really tough, and especially like low fat, you know, it's hot. And so then looking at strategies like, you know, frozen cucumbers, munching on frozen cucumbers, or ice cubes, or even little like weak Oros, making ice cubes out of that, just so you can moisten your mouth and you feel like you're not dying of thirst, because that's our body's response is natural. Like, okay, there's something going on here. we're going to trigger this thirst mechanism, but you have to resist it. So it is really tough.
Very tough. Yeah. And obviously, in terms of, do they, if you are going through that stage of kidney failure, do they remove the kidneys out your body, or do they leave the kidneys in your body?
I mean, it really depends on what the cause of your kidney failure is. It, unless they're causing you any harm, let's leave them where they are. They play an important role in keeping everything else in its place. So unless it's really necessary to take it out, they prefer to leave them in. In some instances, even if they do a kidney transplant, they leave the old kidney in and they just hook up the new one.
Oh, really? Yeah. I didn't know that. And do you work closely with the transplant lists? Obviously your patients that you've obviously got patients that are majority of them on a waiting list. Is it something that they request? Does it go through, is it a procedure to go through that?
It's quite a rigorous process, and it's, you know, there's time, energy and money involved often. So it is something that ideally we would want everybody on the transplant list. There are some patients that opt off that list just because of the sort of emotional cycle that they go through. Because it is hard, you know, and you kind of put under a spotlight. But I think we proactive in trying to encourage all our patients to go through the process. Yeah. Mostly because it also encourages them to look after themselves and make these small changes that they can. But it is hard. I don't know what the stats are, but they are really low in getting a successful or viable kidney transplant.
And even more reason so to encourage people to donate.
Yes.
Because I'm sure that it's just something that as South Africans we still don't really... it's not something that we're familiar with,
yeah,
as to donate your body. You know, I come from a strict Afrikaans upbringing, you know, so no, we can't, you know, can't touch the body. You've got to cremate it, and thank goodness we don't bury anymore, but you still, you know, that's that old generation. And I think it's so important that we encourage people around us to give your body up for donation, yeah. Hey.
A lot of it is just head in the sand. Like,
exactly.
We don't want to think about what happens when we die.
Yeah.
But equally, like, you're not going to use it. So you may as well give it to someone else, you know.
It's going to save.
So what's it, seven?
Seven lives
that you can save if you do organ donation.
Wow.
So it is something that we do, you know, if we see Organ Donor Month or Awareness Days, we do try and... spread the word a little bit, but you're right that there's a lot of sort of belief systems,
yes,
that,
yes,
impact that.
Well, that's definitely something that I'd love to hook up with you guys, and if you,
yeah,
let me know when it is and when, what month or week, that we can also do a drive on radio, which would be fabulous, and that we can drive it from Hoedspruit dialysis will be even better,
yeah,
at the end of the day.
Amazing.
And in obviously, you know, there's obviously different ways of looking after your body and hydrating yourself, absolutely. And what are the signs? What are the signs that you should... Sometimes, you know, once again, I'm also from the generation where if it's not bleeding, you're okay. You know, that sort of just walk it off. And, you know, a backache and a headache and a this and a that, it's okay. But what are the sort of more common signs that one needs to be aware of if you are getting or having problems with your kidneys?
This is the difficulty with kidney disease, and we often see patients diagnosed quite late because the signs of kidney disease is so easily explained away by all sorts of other things. So nausea, vomiting, retaining fluid, brain fog, which I can
associate a few of those already.
I know, right?
With menopause.
Exactly.
Senior moment.
Heart slashes.
Yes, exactly.
Swelling. Yeah, absolutely. That makes sense, hey?
And I mean, how many people go to their docs and they're like, hey, I'm just tired. And they're
of course,
like, okay.
Absolutely.
So there may genuinely be a physical... like chemical need that where you're not just tired because you're like, oh, you know, I'm running after three kids or whatever, I'm working long hours, but there could actually be something sinister behind that. Not that we now want to create this whole panic,
yes,
like, well, I'm tired, I must have kidney disease. But it is about being aware. And rather going like, hey, a really simple blood test could solve that, because I think my imagination is far worse than any real stuff, you know. So I'd far rather have a blood test that goes, okay, these are the facts.
Eliminate.
Than going, maybe it's this, maybe it's that, and it could be really easy. But I mean, it is also different for different patients. And I think about one of our patients, a friend of mine, but when she came to the Kruger, she would come and dialyze us with us in White River. And for her, so she was a like a somatologist, so did all the sort of creams and massages and all that kind of stuff. And she suddenly started developing real itchy skin. And so she thought she's now allergic to something that she's been exposed to. And also because it wasn't a constant. So sometimes it was worse, sometimes it wasn't.
It flared up and went away.
Exactly. Mm. And I mean, you can imagine now, on hindsight, you can see, oh, okay, we can understand why that was happening. But yeah, for her it was a real shock when she's like, I actually want to scratch my skin right off my body. And she must have said something that somebody said, hey, just go and check. And I got a real panicked WhatsApp from her to go, I cannot believe I've got like 3% kidney function already. And for her, so she didn't have the fatigue. She didn't have the retaining fluid. She didn't have the brain fog, but she had the itching. Which, I mean, and I know she'd been to many, you know, to doctors. And maybe they were like around the dinner table. Yeah. So maybe it was in a formal conversation. But something like that could just be something that's worth checking out.
Just something as small as that, hey? Yeah. And obviously just keeping an eye on your urine colour, making sure that that's always clear. And because if you don't have one of the symptoms, you could have all the symptoms. So it's just a matter of being aware of your body, hey, and being aware of what is happening. And then just going back to soft drinks, you know, obviously you wanna stick to the healthier versions of what you drink. So water is definitely a big number. And cranberry juice comes up often.
Yes. So and the connection between urinary tract infections and kidney disease, especially urinary tract infections that again can be explained away and often aren't treated correctly or misdiagnosed. And cranberry juice and UTIs are well
known. Hand in hand.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, it's always, cranberry juice, especially if it's diluted and not heaps of it, will certainly do no harm. And I think that's worth doing. But yeah, again, if it's things like, you know, frequent UTIs or frequent things like that, it's just worth having.
It's the little flags coming up in your life that you.
I think also just having the, like, standing and being prepared to tell somebody that, like, hey, I know it sounds like it might not be serious, but something in my gut tells me that I need to look into this. Yeah. And I think it's always worth having that quiet, calm conversation with yourself and going, is this something that I need to get checked out? And then, you know, find somebody who will listen to you.
So. And and share all the time, hey.
Yeah.
And but I think also as not being biased, but I think as women, we've got so many things that we are juggling. We are always, especially with menopause. You know, I mean, your body sort of shuts down in its own way, and you're quick to say, oh, it's not that, it's something else. And I think when we do, we should just incorporate a check like that, like we do our mammogram once a year.
Yeah.
We go to your gynae once a year for your pap smear. And you know what? Go and have a physical at your GP and just have your kidneys checked.
Yeah.
So it's like it should just become a little extra into our parcel that we already, our basket that we already carry
like
around.
Our own
yes, certificates. Absolutely.
There's maybe a drive there. Like, how have you got your
roadworthy certificate? Absolutely. And obviously, the downside of this is that you have to be open all the time. And do you operate on Christmas Day, New Year's Day? Yeah, so you are open all the time.
No, I mean, what we have is generally, so patients, when they come in 3 times a week, they have, and they're quite territorial, okay? It's my bed, it's my time slot. And because they like the familiarity,
yes,
of it.
Yes, so absolutely.
So some of our units are only open on Monday, Wednesday, Friday because of the patient numbers. Others, we open 6 days a week, but the same patient will come, you know, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. Which does help. But Christmas, I mean, we know that everybody really values the time with their family. And so we just shuffle things around so that everybody can have Christmas Day off. But it does mean that maybe we're working on Sunday,
okay,
in that week.
Okay.
Because I think the importance of connection and, you know, living is really important. It's not that kidney disease and dialysis now becomes your identity. Yeah. It's about holding on to as much as you can that is normal, if that helps.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, listen, guys, it's been absolutely fantastic having you here in the studio. And it's so wonderful to know that we've got this facility on our doorstep. And to have Hoedspruit dialysis right here 24/7, basically, it's an absolute privilege for us. And how can people get hold of you? If they want to get some advice, if they want to connect, if they now know that you are here and they need to get an appointment, they need to get paperwork through to you and even just confirm some information with regards to it. How can they get hold of you?
Yeah, brilliant. I mean, the easiest way, you said earlier about Facebook, like
Facebook
has become,
yes,
the, you know, the yellow pages for us. And there's probably some people who are listening that have no idea what yellow pages are. But that is really the easiest way to just, and you can just put in the search Hoedspruit dialysis.
Perfect.
From that, you can send a WhatsApp, which also helps because it'll come through and then we'll guide as much as we can. We have an amazing team in Hoedspruit. Letty's passionate about education and support. So if there is something that there's...
They can just go straight there as well.
Yeah, just get in touch and we'll arrange something, or maybe we point them in the right direction. Just to know that then, you know, you're not alone. It's not easy to go through something that is causing you some anxiety, and we'll support as best we can.
Absolutely.
We also have International Diabetes Awareness Day coming up, and we will be offering free glucose testing. So it's a tiny prick on
fantastic.
The finger on the 15th. So
Friday.
So if you want to pop in...
This coming Friday,
yes.
15th.
Yes. If you want to pop in, Letty will be happy to do your glucose test and let's see where you at.
Yeah, another one of those really
wonderful
handy numbers to know.
Add
right?
on
to
your,
just,
into your basket.
Stats.
Yeah. Our roadworthy certificate.
Our roadworthy certificate. I think we're onto something, yeah.
Okay, fantastic. And just for those that are not aware of where the location is, you are just on the main road in
but
the...
Yeah, it's between La Taba and the sign shop.
Yes.
We're like tucked in the
corner. In
the corner.
There. Beautiful location.
It is.
Nice, quiet, beautiful trees.
Yeah, and it really, for me, I mean, when we moved in there, I was like, this is what Hoedspruit symbolizes
like
for me. It's like, you know, the grass and the sort of trees is really beautiful.
Yeah.
So yeah,
fantastic.
So
well,
we
thank you so much. We appreciate it. Hoedspruit appreciates it,
thank
and
you.
HFM appreciates you guys coming
thank
in.
You.
And that was the lovely Nikki and Mariska coming in. And yes, there is a relation to the player, which is always nice.